Welcome to Indiana Weekend with John Strauss. This is a kind of radio magazine show about the interesting places and intriguing people in our part of the state. We're always interested in your thoughts. Drop us a note at indianaweekend@gmail.com with your suggestions and comments. Let us know what's going on where you are. Abandoned homes and the resulting blighted neighborhoods are a problem across the country, and that includes Muncie. Last year, the city was awarded nearly $4 million through a program known as the Hardest Hit Fund, Blight Elimination Program. That money was enough to tear down more than 200 dilapidated houses. Abandoned houses can lower nearby property values, so there's been a lot of support for tearing them down, but there have also been notes of caution sounded by folks concerned that Muncie and other communities may be targeting houses with significant historical value. Brad King is Muncie's historic preservation officer and is president of the Old West End Neighborhood Association. We met up with him at Community Circle Park, 503 West Main Street, where an abandoned house was torn down and is now the site of a small park.
We're in the Old West End neighborhood. The Old West End is literally the Old West portion of Muncie. Muncie used to go to about the river, and that was the west. This is the West End of Muncie at that time, hence the name Old West End.
And this would have been in the 1800s?
Yeah, or? This has been at least 1860s and beyond. Really around right before the turn of the century. A lot of these houses kind of date back to about the 1870s to 1890s, and then 1900 really proliferates a lot of architecture through the Old West End.
And what we're seeing around here, these houses, were they the homes of the wealthy landholders?
That's what's really interesting about the neighborhood. So the east side of downtown kind of had the industry owners, and the west end of downtown had like the managers or the foremen of those places and the workers. So you have a really economically, socially mixed group of housing and families that were living in the Old West End, not too different than you have today. So you have some really big, high Victorian style homes, Queen Anne's, 3,500 square feet. And then you have some cottages, like 1,200 square feet. And they're just a block apart. A block apart. So imagine you're a worker working in a Kitzman steel factory, steel and wire, and your foreman lives a block away from you. That's what we're looking at, really.
Give us some examples of that.
Well, if you go down by 1st and 2nd Street in the Old West End, you'll see a lot of smaller houses. But along Charles Street is specifically got big houses and then some smaller houses and some nice big houses and some medium-sized houses. And some of the houses come from the 1920s, like some of the bungalows that we see there, and then some of them are nice, big Victorian Queen Anne's. There's a house, it's blight, it's on its way to being rehabbed, but it's pretty rundown looking, but it's the Vandercook Kitzelman Rector Home, and it's at Adams and Council. And Kitzelman, that's a big name around here, that's who was living there, and that's the kind of homes that were big families, big business.
What happened to places like this in 08, 09 during this great downturn?
Well, you lost your equity, basically, in your housing. So you got underwater in your mortgage. You owed more than the house was worth, a lot of cases. Since we're a university town, we have a lot of rentals too. So you might have people that had their primary residence and several rentals, or at least one rental. And when all that turned upside down, then the financial stock market followed. When that followed, businesses were worth less. And they had to shed some of that weight that they had at that time. And a lot of times, that's unfortunately people. That's personnel. That's, you know, their livelihoods. And as they lost their jobs, they went where jobs were. So if jobs didn't follow that economic downturn, which we know it didn't happen right away, then they followed where there went jobs. And they may have abandoned their primary residence and or a rental place that they had in this area. And with that, it was either, and you know, when you have a housing downturn, that's actually a buyer's market, but you also got sketchy about the type of mortgages that were around, so people didn't buy right after that, and those houses more than likely were staying empty and got turned into blight.
So across the state, you had communities very concerned about the blight and its effect on neighborhoods, and you had funds directed toward remediating that, in some cases just by tearing down the houses. So you have this balance, right, between wanting to preserve the historic aspects of the community and address the blight.
Oh, absolutely. And Muncie is absolutely no different from any other legacy or Rust Belt city where we've had to determine what houses come down, what houses stay. It's easy to look at an abandoned home that has broken windows and maybe even a bad roof and say, nah, no one's going to do anything like that and tear it down. But it's a little bit harder to find people with vision and patience to say, no, I'm going to invest in the house and turn it around. So the key is to how do we prioritize that? And so one of the ways that I've been working with the city as the historic preservation officer is to prioritize those houses that have the best architectural characteristics, but also have the cultural history of who lived there. Was it a pioneer of Muncie? Was it a mover and shaker during the turn of the 20th century of Muncie? Then let's deprioritize those houses for demolition, and let's get some of these other houses that people aren't interested in and bring them down. And let's find ways to put families back in these houses and get them rehabbed. And several of the houses around here fit that scheme.
Could you talk about some of the houses that we're standing next to? And
sure.
Now, we're in this park, and there was a home here.
Yes, there was a Victorian Queen Anne home built at the end of the Victorian era, about 1900. It's about 2.5 stories, and eventually, during its 100-year reign, it became 5 units. You know, again, when houses are that big, it's hard to get a single family to want to take on 35,000 square feet, or 3,500. The house that was here was 5 units. It was about 2.5 stories. Eventually though, people weren't renting it, maybe for whatever reason, and it became blight. So in 2012, that house was deconstructed by an architectural salvage yard who salvaged what it could from the architectural characteristics of it and repurpose it and resell it. And then it was left with this vacant lot. The Neighborhood Association, along with Ball State students and Ball State anthropology professor Nick Kawa, put together this park. And this is Community Circle, and this is one way that we can work to repurpose lots that are left over, basically, from the demolition of blight.
That's Brad King, Muncie's Historic Preservation Officer. We talked with him at Community Circle Park, the site of a former abandoned home in the 500 block of West Main Street. He mentioned the volunteers who helped build the park, including Hans Heinzelman, who helped with the woodwork.
Indiana Weekend, real radio from just down the road. Look for that name on Facebook and drop us a line. Let us know what you think at indianaweekend@gmail.com. Now here's John Strauss.
Talking with Brad King, Historic Preservation Officer for the City of Muncie, and we were speaking from the new Community Circle Park, the site of a former abandoned home in the 500 block of West Main Street. You might call this ground zero for the current debate over how to handle the problem of blighted homes. The city has received millions in federal funds to demolish abandoned homes. King and others are hoping to save historic structures that can still add something to the community. And when a house can't be saved, he's hoping to see more projects like the new park in the old West End neighborhood where an abandoned house used to be.
This is a great place to do it. It's a gateway from downtown to the neighborhood. It's an exit from downtown. So when you're leaving downtown, this is what you're seeing. When you're coming into our neighborhood, this is what you're seeing. And hopefully that says things are turning around in the Old West End in a historic neighborhood.
What signs could you point to that things have improved here? Are you seeing more people coming to live here? Are you seeing structures that a few years ago would have remained blighted but are being fixed up now? That kind of thing?
Absolutely. I've been contacted by two other developers who are looking to do two other rehabs or new builds right here in the Old West End. And I don't want to give them away really, but they're pretty common for Muncie, and they've worked with us before, and so we're really happy to see them come back to this neighborhood. They helped do the neighborhood stabilization program at phase 3 back in 2011, and they've done other builds and rehab since then. But I've also been contacted by someone who wants to repurpose the Wilmore Apartments building right across the street from us. This was a doctor's office and apartments building. It eventually became, most people I think will remember it as Planned Parenthood from the 90s, the 80s and 90s, and the turn of the millennia. And now it's empty. It's not necessarily blighted, it's kept secure, but it's empty. And someone wants to repurpose this for a type of live workspace. And that's the type of repurposing that we would love to see happen, not just in the Old West End, not just in historic districts, but in different areas that have been hit the same way. And a lot of unfortunately, is historic areas that have been hit this way and are close to downtown.
Is there a template here that says there's a cumulative effect when you invest in a community or a neighborhood? At some point, there's a tipping point, and
absolutely. If we can get one house to be rehabbed, then hopefully we can get another house to rehab and another house to be rehabbed, and then we can tip. If we can tip one house, we can tip a street. If we can tip a street, we can tip the next block. If we can tip the next block, we can tip a neighborhood. If we can tip more than one neighborhood, we can tip this entire city. And that's what some of these efforts are. And it's not just the Old West End, it's not just historic preservation. Historic preservation, along with demolition, are just tools in redeveloping and stabilizing these areas. Now, Old West End has seen a lot of that success. Now, we've looked at a lot of different places for that success, and I can't say that one or the other has been the model. It's just been, oh, I like what's happening there, and I think we could do something like that here, or we've come up with it completely on our own.
What are the signs of progress in downtown that you look toward and say, this is happening?
Well, really, it's the facade restoration program is a big, we did that 15 years ago. And if you remember, 15, 20 years ago, downtown wasn't necessarily a destination for Muncie. Now, downtown's a destination for Muncie. We've had at least one giant round. They've done facade grants that were a lot smaller packets before, but everyone remembers that big one that happened around 2000. And we've done another big one just in the last couple years. And those have changed those buildings around, and they've made downtown lively. We've got a hotel again coming to downtown. That's gonna bring people, that's gonna bring foot traffic, that's gonna hopefully bring shops. People want a window shop, that's gonna increase traffic. They're gonna see areas like the Old West End, they're gonna see historic areas like Gilbert, like the Emily Kimbrough local district, and they're gonna hopefully wanna live in one of these areas. Same with the Lofts of the Roberts. That was our hotel at one time, and now we have it rehabbed as lofts for retirement individuals. And they're gonna be, today's retirement individuals are much different. They're retiring with disposable income and with higher mobility. So they're gonna be shopping and moving around, and that's gonna bring their families closer to them. Hopefully they're gonna see this area and go, you know what, I wouldn't mind living closer to mom and dad. I'll live right here in the Old West End. I'll live over here in Gilbert.
From a public policy standpoint, what needs to happen? Have there been bills before the legislature, or is there public action that needs to happen to foster more of this?
Absolutely. There is not enough money available to do what we call bricks and mortar type of rehab. There's not enough money funding the actual swinging of hammers to do the physical labor and buy the materials to rehab these buildings. You know, we got the hardest hit funds, and that's gonna help a city like Muncie out that's seen a lot of blight, because there's gonna be houses that need to come down because we can't invest them. Maybe they don't meet the historical characteristics that we kind of want for saving. So, you know, we prioritize those. We put the historical structures on the bottom of that list. We put the other structures on the top. We work our way through it. We demolish those houses. But what the federal government could do, what the state government could do, especially when we have $2 billion surplus sitting around, we could put just a fraction of it. 1% of that could be put into a revolving loan fund, for example, or maybe a granting program. And communities that are based off a tier program that Indiana already has, 1, 2, and 3, Indianapolis being the only first tiered program or first class city that Indiana has, and then cities like Muncie and Fort Wayne and Evansville, they're kind of like your second class, you know, Bloomington, Terre Haute, and then you got like third class, which is all the other cities. If they could be in classes or tiers and apply for that money for certain projects, historic preservation, that would help a tremendous amount. The other thing is a changing in the way that we can either land bank or that we can get money to land bank. And so communities want a land bank, and it's really difficult in how it gets formatted. I don't want to go through all the boring legislature of it, but if it could be simplified, I think that would help communities like Muncie out too.
That is Brad King, Historic Preservation Officer for the City of Muncie, as we spoke at the new Community Circle Park, the site of a former abandoned home on West Main Street.
My house is a very, very, very fine house with two cats in the yard.
This is Indiana Weekend with John Strauss on Indiana Public Radio.
Are there places that you've been to in Indiana that you've seen and thought, gee, Muncie could be like this if we could, if the stars were in alignment and everything worked out, we could be like this?
A lot of times I tend to look towards Bloomington for that example. They may not, I don't know if they have necessarily the historic preservation movement that I would like to see, but they have a lot of activity. They have a lot of draw for people that I think Muncie has the potential to have. And so some of the programs they have, I would like a live work program, I wouldn't mind seeing come to Muncie. Madison, Indiana, everyone goes down to Madison, Indiana for their historic shopping, for their historic events. That's directly related to historic preservation. And downtown Muncie with their facade granting, that's hopefully going to turn that corner as well. I mean, it's already turned the corner from what we know, but hopefully it'll start being more of a draw for people, not just in East Central Indiana, but all across Indiana and really the Midwest.
What are some of the trends that are happening now that could fuel and continue this kind of resurgence and residential use of downtown Muncie?
Well, I think some of the industries that we see happening deal with either like health science type sectors. You know, health in general is a growing employment. So Ball Memorial is a stable here in Muncie, and it's going to be obviously a kind of a magnet for that. But there's also going to be the new green technology that we see. Brevini, the windmill turbine manufacturer, is put just out by Daleville. They're going to, even though that's in Daleville, that's good. Muncie's going to attract people who want green energy, who want to use that technology. There's also going to be a movement of just kind of into entrepreneurs, people who need to start a business. We have a university, a great university, Ball State, and every year there are graduates leaving their business department and going somewhere else to start their business. Now, I don't know, but one of those persons is Bill Gates, the next Bill Gates, or the next Steve Jobs, or the next Tesla. Like, they're going to be the people, and why can't Muncie keep them here? We can. Part of that's going to be finding new uses for old structures and incentivizing people to come here.
As a historic preservation person, what is it about these houses that make them worth saving?
It's their connection to history. The architecture tells us what the architects, how the styles of housing were going at the time, the way the flooring layout, how people lived, and how they kind of ran their housing routine in a way. The other thing is, every one of these houses, whether it's from the 1900s or that house in the middle of the 20th century, has a story behind it. And that story is about the people that lived there. And if the architecture may tell us about the style and about the art of the times, but the stories of these people, that brings us a lot closer to knowing and understanding the history of these places.
And when they're fixed up, they look pretty nice.
Yeah, well, they look real nice. You know what? A fixed up historic district, a fixed up historic landmark, depreciates slower and appreciates faster. So, and you're more than likely to recuperate your investment in a historic home, a properly restored home, than you are a home that's been remodeled or a home that's, well, especially a home that's in needs of repair. We can take a historic home that was single family and we can repurpose it into rentals, into live work. We can do the same thing to apartment buildings that were originally apartment buildings. My main concern a lot of times is the exterior, keeping that exterior characteristic so everyone on the outside can see how that building was and still is. What you do on the inside then, we want to help so that you can do the activities you want, whether it's just live, whether it's work, whether it's both. That way it's used, it's back on the tax rolls, and everyone's going to like that situation.
As you look around here, talk about these houses that we're seeing, and are they examples? Can we see examples here of where some investment worked and really made a difference, and others where there was investment maybe 20 years ago and another round is needed? And what are we seeing?
Oh, absolutely. Right over here behind the camera, we have the Eiserman House. This was built in 1900, and sometime again, in its 100-year reign, it just dilapidated. Well, Eco Rehab, which is a nonprofit that looks to do rehabs with a green kind of twist, a green energy twist, took this house on as part of the Neighborhood Stabilization Program Phase 3 in 2011. They rehabbed this house and it was sold even before they had it finished. It was sold to a lady who eventually became the vice president to the Neighborhood Association here. And so that is a pinnacle example of what you want to achieve with not just redevelopment, but with historic preservation as redevelopment. You want to rehab an old home, you want to get it repurposed for single family, and then you want to see that person, see how they get active. And that, I mean, that's just fantastic. We have a house over here that was rehabbed in the 90s by a local economic redevelopment corporation in the Old West End that turned it into rentals, and they kept it up pretty much going forward up until today. And it keeps houses like that. They've kept a house like that. Maybe it's, you know, needs a paint job, but they've kept it from getting to a condition like the one across the street. Now that used to be a single family home. And in the 70s, it was apartments. And now it's it's abandoned. And it's maybe not dilapidated.
Can that be saved?
Oh, this house could definitely be saved. But it's really a matter, does someone see the potential to invest the kind of money that it needs to be saved? We have, obviously you can see some boarded up windows. You can see some busted out windows. Once in a while, one of those doors gets kicked in by someone. The other thing that really kind of prevents people from taking on this specific property is it was a meth lab. And if the meth chemicals got down in that HVAC system, then it's all over the house. And you've got to do the restoration of it all over the house and got to mitigate that. And that, I mean, sometimes that's as less as maybe $5,000. Maybe that's double that amount. And that can, I mean, that's not a lot of money when you're rehabbing an entire home, but that can make or break a budget.
Homeward bound. Home, where my thoughts are escaping. Home, where my music's playing. Home, where my love lies waiting silently for me.
A very enthusiastic Brad King, historic preservation officer for the city of Muncie, talking about the history and the homes of the Old West End neighborhood, and really, by extension, of similar neighborhoods across the city, the state, and the country. Some places hit hard in the mortgage crisis of 2007-2009, slowly making a comeback. Brad King's among the people thinking about how to help that along, wondering if it might be possible to get support for communities that have willing residents but need some help to pay for all the swinging hammers needed to make it all happen. That's our show for today. I'm John Strauss. Big thanks to our producer, Sean Ashcraft. Glad you could join us this time. Hope you'll stay in touch. Drop me a note at indianaweekend@gmail.com if you would like more information or have a suggestion. In the meantime, thanks and have a great week. Until we meet again on the next Indiana Weekend on Indiana Public Radio.
Indiana Weekend with host John Strauss. Our show is engineered at Indiana Public Radio, produced by Sean Ashcraft. Major support for Indiana Weekend comes from IPR's listeners. We hope you join your friends who are IPR members. You can go to indianapublicradio.org or give us a call at 1-800-646-1812. Join us again next week for Indiana Weekend with John Strauss here on Indiana Public Radio.